This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's talk about the people that don't get their fair share of attention in the Adelson case. Not Donna, not Charlie, not Wendy. The biggest victims here, other than Dan, the kids. Wendy's kids, Dan's kids, Donna Adelson's grandkids. Because while the rest of the world has spent nearly a decade arguing about guilt, motive, and family dynamics, two children have been living through something that no child should ever have to experience: being ripped from a murdered father and left in the care of a family accused and now convicted of orchestrating their dad's death. And what's worse, they've had to live inside a story that's been rewritten in real time by the very people who caused their pain. These aren't abstract victims. They are human beings. They are the ones who pay the quiet, lifelong price for everyone else's choices. Imagine for a second being one of those kids. They are now in their mid-teens. But it didn't start that way. When all this went down, they were small. And when you're small, you don't fully understand death yet. You wake up one morning and your dad is gone. Not gone to work, not gone on a trip, just gone. You see adults crying, whispering. You hear the word murder. You see your mother tense up when someone mentions the news. You notice that everyone is suddenly careful around you, like the world has broken, but they don't want to tell you why. And that's the beginning, the first fracture, because trauma doesn't always start with the event itself. It starts with the silence that follows it. Children process loss differently than adults. They don't have the vocabulary for it. Instead, they absorb it through behavior, the way people act around them, the things people don't say, the tension that suddenly fills a room. It's kind of like pets to a certain extent. You know, your pets don't exactly understand if you're going to explain your issues to them, but they sure can understand your emotions and feelings. Kids do the same thing. When adults hide the truth, children learn to fill in the blanks themselves. And the stories they invent to survive are almost always worse than the truth. It's how our brains work. Now, picture that same child a few years later. You start to hear things, maybe at school, maybe from other adults. People whisper about your family, that your father was murdered in his driveway, that your grandmother and uncle are on trial, that the people who tucked you into bed might have had something to do with why your dad never came home. That's the kind of psychological earthquake that splits a person in half before they even know who they are. Psychologists have a term for what comes next: loyalty conflict. It's what happens when a child is emotionally bonded to two people or two groups who hate each other. Divorced parents often create loyalty conflicts when they weaponize love. But this is something darker, because in this case, the loyalty conflict isn't just emotional, it's existential. Half of these children's identity comes from their father, a man who by all accounts was loving, engaged, devoted, and the center of their world. The other comes from their mother's family, the same family now branded as the ones who allegedly planned his murder, the same ones who are convicted of murdering their father. Not Wendy, I know, never been convicted, maintains her innocence. We're talking about Donna and Charlie. So every time they think about their father, they feel love and loss. And every time they think about their mother's family, they feel love and safety, but also fear, confusion, and guilt, and probably anger at this point. But how do you love someone the world says is evil? How do you reject the people who raised you when rejecting them means losing another family all over again? Children can't process that kind of contradiction. Adults can't process that kind of contradiction. So their minds do what minds are designed to do under unbearable pressure. They split. Now, this is all just conjecture. This is my opinion. This is just talking about what they may have going on. I do not know these kids. I am not professing to say exactly what's going on in their lives. We are taking a look empathetically at the hell landscape that they are unfortunately having to grow up in. When that split happens, that is what's called protective dissonance. It's when the mind invents a version of reality that allows you to stay attached to the people you depend on, even if that means rewriting the truth. If you're a child and the people who feed you, love you, and tuck you in at night are accused of being monsters, you don't stop loving them. You stop believing the accusation. You start telling yourself the news is lying, the prosecutors are cruel, the world doesn't understand. You create a version of the story that keeps your caregivers innocent, because if they're not innocent, you don't have anyone left to protect you. It's not denial in the adult sense, it's survival. It's the only way to keep breathing when your entire identity depends on people the world says you should fear. And over time, that survival mechanism hardens into a worldview. It becomes part of your moral code. Our family is good. The outsiders are bad. Anyone who says otherwise wants to hurt us. That belief isn't a lie to those kids. It is a lifeline. Now think about the environment they've been in. These aren't just kids navigating grief. They're kids growing up inside a public scandal. Their father's name is searchable. Their family is infamous. Their story is splashed across headlines and documentaries and podcasts. They can't Google their own name without running into words like murder, hitman, Adelson, and convicted. In families like this, adults often try to protect children by controlling the narrative. They say things like, don't believe everything you read. Or the media lies. Or they're just jealous of our family. And it works for a while when they're kids and they don't have context. Until they start looking around going, who'd be jealous of this shit? And that may sound protective, but it's actually another trauma response, a collective denial system that forces a child to carry the burden of pretending everything is fine. Imagine being told your dad was murdered, but the people who are in prison didn't do it. How do you make sense of that? If your brain accepts it, you're living in delusion. If your brain rejects it, you're betraying your family. There's no version of that story where the child actually wins. In trauma psychology, this kind of experience is known as the double bind trauma, when every possible choice leads to pain. You can love your family or you can believe the truth, but you can't do both. And when children live with that kind of emotional no-win situation for years, it creates deep developmental scars, chronic anxiety, distorted self-image, and an inability to trust their own perceptions. They grow into adults who constantly second-guess themselves. They question whether their memories are real. They learn that truth is dangerous, something that destroys families, so they suppress it, and that suppression can last decades. Let's talk about grief, because grief in this kind of environment becomes radioactive. Normally, grief is a healing process, but for these kids, grieving their father means acknowledging that someone they love killed him. That's not grief, that's emotional suicide. So instead, they compartmentalize. They shut down the grief to preserve the relationships they still have. They learn to function in fragments. Part of them mourns privately. Part of them performs normalcy publicly. And part of them lives in suspended animation, waiting for the truth to stop hurting. Again, that's not healing. That's containment. And containment is what turns childhood trauma into lifelong PTSD. Again, who's to thank for all of this? Well, of course, Divine Donna over here. As they grow older, they're going to start encountering versions of the story they were never told. They'll see news clips of their grandmother and uncle in handcuffs, if they haven't already. I'm sure they have. They'll watch courtroom footage of their mother testifying under immunity. They'll read transcripts that say their family called their dad a hostage or a problem to be solved. And the more they learn, the more the world they were raised in starts to crack. That's what's called traumatic revelation. When the truth arrives too late and too violently for the psyche to absorb, it's the moment when the mind can no longer maintain the protective narrative and everything it's built to survive starts to collapse. That collapse can look like depression, rage, isolation, even self-destructive behavior. Because how do you integrate the idea that the people who kissed you goodnight were capable of such cruelty? It's ambiguous loss. It's a feeling of losing someone who's still alive, someone you can see, touch, talk to, but who's emotionally or morally gone. And for these kids, ambiguous loss happens twice. They've lost their father completely, physically, permanently, but they also lost other members of their family emotionally, including mom. She's a link to the people who destroyed everything, and whether she participated or not, she's part of that system mentally. No matter how much she may want to be there, and I believe she does. I'm sure she loves her children. And if she had nothing to do with this, she is also in a hellish hellscape, engineered by that woman. They lost the right to innocence, to safety, to truth, and those aren't things you can ever fully get back. And we have to understand something crucial here. Children are remarkably resilient, but resilience isn't immunity from pain. It is adaption. They will hopefully learn to survive, but survival often comes with side effects: distrust, emotional detachment, perfectionism, or the inability to form secure attachments later in life. They may overachieve academically to regain control. They may avoid conflict entirely, terrified of anger because they've seen where anger leads, or they may internalize the family's denial so deeply that it becomes part of their DNA. These are the real costs of this case. Not the verdicts, not the appeals, not the headlines. The cost is two human beings whose lives are now a psychological balancing act between truth and love in hell. When we talk about justice for Dan Markell, it's easy to focus on punishment. We want closure, accountability, resolution, but the truth is, there's no version of justice that can restore what those kids lost. Because when what they lost isn't just apparent, it's the blueprint for what family is supposed to mean. They've watched the adults in their lives weaponize love, money, and loyalty. They've seen how far denial can stretch before it snaps. They've learned that sometimes the people who say they're protecting you are really just protecting themselves. And they'll spend years, decades, trying to untangle which parts of their identity belong to their father, which parts belong to their mother, and which parts were created entirely out of fear. So when people ask, why does this case still matter? It's because those children are still living it every single day. They're living it when they walk into school and see a headline pop up on someone's phone. They're living it every time someone whispers their last name in a hallway. They're living it every time they wonder if they're allowed to miss their father out loud. And that's what makes them the true victims, not because they're tragic symbols, but because they're human beings forced to live inside a story that should never have existed. The long-term effects of trauma like this are profound. Research on children of homicide victims shows elevated rates of anxiety disorders, depression, and relationship instability. But children of familial homicide, when one parent is killed by or through the actions or the other parent's family, experience something even deeper: identity trauma. And identity trauma means that every relationship they form as adults, romantic, professional, parental, becomes a mirror reflecting back the question, can I trust the people I love? It's not just about fear or of harm. It's about fear of illusion, fear that love is always hiding a secret. And that's the kind of damage that therapy can manage but rarely erase. It becomes a lifelong negotiation between memory and self-protection. And this is where we as the public have a responsibility, because while everyone's been obsessed with Wendy's immunity or Donna's sentencing or Charlie's appeals, the children have become background characters in their own tragedy. They deserve to be the center of the conversation, not as objects of pity, but as reminders of what justice is supposed to protect in the first place. And just how dangerous people like this are. Especially when you can see them coming but want to stick your head in the sand. They deserve a world where people stop treating this as a courtroom drama and start recognizing it as generational trauma. These kids didn't choose their parents. They didn't choose this fight. They didn't choose to have their lives weaponized. And someday, when they're old enough to understand everything that happened, they're going to have to find a way to rebuild their own version of the truth. One that isn't filtered through a courtroom or a family PR strategy. It's going to take years of therapy, honesty, and probably a lot of painful distance from the people who raised them. Because something healing it's not always easy to come by. Sometimes healing means walking away from the version of love that broke you. So if you want to know who the real victims of the Adelson saga are, don't look at the adults fighting over the narrative. Look at the children who carry the consequences long after the rest of us move on. They are the human evidence of everything that went wrong, not in one moment, but in 1,000 choices made by the people who were supposed to protect them. And they will live in that shadow long after the lights of the courtroom have faded. Because for them, this isn't a story that ends with a verdict. It's a story that started with a father's death and will follow them quietly and painfully for the rest of their lives. Maybe you have a story. Maybe you've been through something like this. Share your thoughts in the comments section. People read this stuff. Who knows? Maybe these kids will read this stuff. And they're trying to search for answers. And the more comforting voices out there that they can find, probably the better. They can get through it. There's a path. Life can be better and can be completely devoid of the monstrous hellscape that their family created for them. It does get better. I certainly hope it does for these kids. Your thoughts on YouTube? Search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. Sure to press subscribe as well. Again, wherever you're getting podcasts, hit subscribe too so you don't miss any of our commentaries and coverage. I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.